Cooking with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahava, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos. Hey, my name is Jed Lee, and you are tuned in to Reading with Your Kids. We are coming to you from Reedville, the loveliest neighborhood in all of Boston. Our mission is to help all families grow closer through reading. And we do that by introducing you to the coolest authors, the funniest tales, and a whole lot of reading inspiration for the whole family. We hope you'll help us spread the word by telling all of your family and friends about the show, your kids' teachers, librarians, principals, random strangers you meet on the street, and letting them all know that they can hear us on the WREB AM-FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Podcast Addict, CastBox, Amazon Music, Player FM, Boomplay. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. We have an incredibly inspirational episode for you right now. First up, Lynn Smith, former CNN anchor, is here to celebrate her new picture book. It's called Just Keep Going. Later in the show, we'll have a listen back to a conversation with our friend Shannon Anderson celebrating her inspiring picture book, Why Is For Yet. Join us right now from the beautiful state of South Carolina. Our guest is here today to celebrate her new picture book. It's called Just Keep Going. Please welcome to the show, Lynn Smith. Hey, Lynn, how are you?
Hey, Jed, it's so good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Now, when I hear the word just keep going, it's usually from, you know, people who are tired of me and they just said, keep going, just get out of here, go away, go away. I have a feeling this is not what that's about.
Yes. No, I don't want to apply it to that. This is for the little kids out there that are feeling overwhelmed by big feelings. So the book even opens up. It says, mouse sometimes has big feelings, right? And so I wrote this book from the lens of working with wildly successful executives. And they came to me thinking that they were going to become better communicators. But what I exposed for them is the reason they weren't effective communicators is not because of what they were saying. It was because of the voice between their ears. We call it your brain bully. It's the voice telling you, what if people don't like this? What if I screw this up? What if? And it leads to all the stumbles or the rambling. And I thought, if this is something that the most successful executives on the planet experience, then it's definitely something all of us experience. I certainly know that I did, and I know everyone that I've ever met struggles with these types of fears. And we have to ask ourselves why. Well, when we're children, we are taught, sit still, get great grades, be first place. And so we are kind of breeding perfectionists. Whereas if we teach at a very young age, fear isn't something that needs to stop you. It's something you can push through. What does bravery look like? Here's what courage looks like. What is failure? It's actually a gift because it leads you to your successes. All of these big concepts that I wanted to be able to drill down into something that was magical and fun, which was my biggest challenge as a debut children's author, is how do we tell these big concepts to little kids? And through the help of many people in my community, as far as and mentors that I have and also people that I've worked with in the publishing industry, helped me to craft the book to what it is now, which are practical, simple messages for children to address fear in a way that doesn't feel so scary and allows them to just keep going.
Now, is the book set up like a story, or are we looking at a new lesson on every page?
It's set up like a story. So Mouse is in a forest and he encounters various animals throughout his path. And he's, sometimes I have big feelings. And the other animals say, have you tried giving yourself a hug? Ooh, that helps. I'm going to just keep going. And the next is sometimes Mouse is afraid he's going to fail as he's crossing a bridge. And this beautiful deer is like, have you tried just putting one step in front of the other? And eventually Mouse gets to his destination, which is his home, where he wants to be. And he got there because he just kept going. And along the way, friends shared with him various physical techniques, which I use a lot in coaching executives, deep breaths and visualization, all of the things drilled down into something fun for kids, like jumping up and down to shake off their nerves. And then he goes to bed and he's swimming through the clouds of just keep going through this, just keep going through that, and wakes up ready to start a new day and face whatever challenge he may face. And I just have to point out, the way that our illustrator Lauren captured the magic of Mouse and Friends is beyond my wildest imagination of what I could have done, and that's what a true artist does. She has the most beautiful way of showing the anxiousness or the fear visually around Mouse through sort of this black cloud that has some jagged edges that slowly dissipates over his adventure. So just a shout out to her, because this book would not be what it is and the impact that it is without her magical artistic hand.
And I don't know if you said her name. If I might.
Lauren Galagos.
Yes, yes. All right, Lauren. Good job. Good job. Was it hard for you? Because we've only been talking, chatting for about 5 or 6 minutes. You obviously have a lot of energy. Which
That's
is
my job.
Which is a good thing.
What I did for a living.
There you go. And you also seem like a person who knows what they want and is not willing to sit back and take something that's less than what they want. And this is a compliment. I'm not.
Thank you. I'll take it as a compliment. You're right, too.
was it difficult to kind of let go and let the illustrator tell part of your story?
So I am exactly spot on with what you described up until the point when I love to trust the experts. So here's what I mean. When I was pitching this book through my agent to the biggest publishing houses out there, we got a lot of no's. And I just posted this on Instagram recently, my rejection letters, because I really wanted to make it clear that this was not just like, oh, Lynn was a news anchor, so she just got a book deal and this was easy for her and all of that. And that's the whole point of the book. Mm-hmm. Is I just kept going through all of my rejections. And so the part of my personality that maybe you're picking up on is I won't take no for an answer. I also trust the experts that if they're saying no, there's a reason. So every single time we got feedback, we elevated the story. We tweaked some things. So it actually is the greatest gift that I got those no's, because this story turned into what it is because of those no's. But once I landed in the perfect publishing house, which is Sourcebook Kids, which could not have been a more fortuitous, and I am beyond grateful that they accepted this book. I knew that they were the best in the business to handle this. So when they said to me, we'll let you know who the publisher or who the illustrator is, I was like, you know what you're doing. I will trust you in that. And they sent a few ideas and I shared Lauren being my favorite, but I knew ultimately is up to them. They picked her. And then I thought, you know, there's something about her illustrations that I saw in her portfolio that I knew she was going to be able to capture it. And I didn't have a single note. They showed us the illustrations as they came along. The only thing that we changed, the publisher changed, was just, will he wear an outfit, like a hat and a overalls, or will he not wear that? And I didn't really have much of a say. I was like, you all are the experts at this. Mm-hmm. And I've learned in my career, you find the best in the business and then you trust them and let them do their job. And the outcome is something I couldn't be more happy with.
It's interesting. You have that ability to trust in the experts and trust in other people. Did you gain that trust before or after you learned to trust yourself and to quiet the bully in your brain?
Took me a long time to beat the bully in my brain. And that's why I created the method that I did that I now teach executives. I needed it myself because it used to paralyze me as a public speaker. Nobody expected that, but that was the reality. I was a news anchor, so I talked to a camera. I didn't have to look at faces in the sea of audiences. So my brain bully oftentimes led me to have a shaky voice. And one time it had me completely freeze. And so instead of stopping keynote speaking, I just kept going. You'll see a theme in that messaging. I hired a coach. I created a method that we now train executives with. When I saw it work for me, I wanted them to have it. When I saw it work for them, I wanted to bring it to as many people as possible. So now as a keynote speaker, we talk about the Beat Your Brain Bully method and how that fear that is paralyzing you on stage can be something that's beaten. And it took me from bombing on stage to being able to be a credible keynote speaker that speaks around the country.
Awesome. You know, I've being someone who's done 40 years worth of live in shows at schools all around the country, bombing can be fun sometimes. if you're able in the middle of bombing saying, wow, I'm
failing at this
at all.
Yeah, I actually did that in the middle of the keynote that I bombed. I stopped and I said, I'm sorry, I'm failing at this. Let's go to Q&A. And we went to Q&A and I had one woman walk up to me and say, you were the inspiration you didn't intend to be because I pushed through something that was really embarrassing. And then I had a waiter at the big fancy country club that we were doing this presentation at. And he just gave me a hug and he's like, I can't tell you how much I needed to see that. And it was maybe the need to know that perfection is impossible. And even if I'm packaged in a polished, you know, way because I was groomed for 15 years as a news anchor, right? So the energy or the voice cadence or the delivery is from 15 years of national news anchorhood. It's important for people to see that there isn't, the reality is not perfect. I want people to know that. I wanted people to know about the rejections, the failures. It's the whole point of just keep going. And I just had to learn it in my 40s. I want my children to learn it when they're 6 and not 46.
Yeah. I love that. It is really important. I remember this is just coming back to me. My daughter, when she was a kid, she would like to come out and be on stage with me. And she was 4 or 5 years old. She was too young to sit backstage by herself. So what I would do is older kids in her dance studio, I'd let them come and they'd do a dance and they do a dance together. And then the older kid would watch my daughter when they're off stage. But I remember one of the kids' dads, I just said to the girl, just go out and improvise, whatever you want to do, just go out. And she did a great job. It wasn't perfect, but it was great and it entertained the kids. But her dad came up to her afterwards and was like, why would you go out there and do something that wasn't perfected? I don't understand. You must. And I felt so incredibly bad for the kid. And I did. I gave her a big hug and I said, look, kid, you've been with me all summer long. You know, there ain't been a show that I've done perfectly. Every show I make a mistake. Don't worry about it. And I think she listened to me.
I hope she did, because I mean, this is something I hope every parent thinks about, right? You've been to the soccer games or the baseball games where the parents are just going insane and they're screaming from the sidelines. And just picture yourself as an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old and you're out there just trying to have fun. Mm-hmm. You don't know that maybe your parents have dreams for you to go play Major League Baseball. You're just looking to have fun and live like a child. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you're looking around and you're seeing these big grown-ups being like, how could you miss that? Come on. So we breed perfectionism. And you pointed that out. We're sent these messages at a very early age that you have to be perfect. Or the other side of that is stay small. It's safer there. Stay back. Keep quiet. And all of those things are what now when executives are handed over to me, and I ask them the question when they're saying, you know, I feel like I have a hard time putting myself out there. And I always ask the question, and I hope everyone listening asks themselves this question. I've had to do the same. Where do you think that comes from? And when they think about it, almost 100% of the time, it's rooted something in childhood. So that little girl one day will be in a boardroom and will be like, it has to be perfect. This has to be perfect. Because she's been told that perfectionism is success. Where, newsflash, perfectionism is the only thing in life in which you have a guaranteed failure rate, because it's impossible. Yet why are we pushing it?
Mm-hmm.
So my heart pulls for that little girl.
Well, she's a woman right now. She's a very successful woman. So I'm very happy for her. And she's not perfect. She's great.
Yeah. That's.
How did you learn these lessons?
I had a very interesting childhood being a first-generation American on my father's side. So the concept of resiliency was ingrained in me, hearing stories of my grandparents fleeing war, my father spending years in bomb shelters before he could come to the United States, struggling with his English, being told he wasn't smart enough to go to college. He went on to be a wildly successful executive with multiple masters from Ivy League schools. So that continuously told me your no is not your end, mm-hmm. even though it wasn't in the parenting style that my parents had. It's just learned behavior. I watched my father work extremely hard for his successes. He was no silver spoon kid, mm-hmm. no Nepo baby in existence. And so the hard work and the resiliency piece was something I felt a responsibility in adulthood. And now I feel as much of a responsibility to carry that over to parenthood.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're very busy training executives, helping them out. I'm sure that's very lucrative. We've talked here on the podcast that, there are an awful lot of very successful authors out there, but most authors are just, kind of getting by and not making a gazillion dollars. What was it that said to you, I'm going to take time out of this very successful business training executives to write a book that, hopefully will bring in a few bucks, but who knows?
I will say, first of all, this was 6 years in the making. So from pen to paper to pub date and the book behind my shoulder, 6 years. And you don't do something like that for the dollars. So you do something in life, either because you make money for food on the table or you have failure, you have a purpose. And this was a message that changed my life. It was three words that were sent to me when I was in my early 30s going through an extremely difficult time. And a friend in college simply texted me, a friend from college simply texted me, just keep going. And she wasn't, everything's going to be okay. Things are going to work out. All of those things that you sort of say when somebody's struggling, just keep going. And I called upon it various times in my career, in my journey into motherhood. And so I felt a purpose to share what I thought was transformational for myself in the hope that not only would it be transformational for the children that would read this, but also for the parents. And right now we need that message probably more than ever in our world of chaos. So it wasn't for the dollars. If I make $3 off of this book, it was worth it when my son at night is reading it. And it still brings tears to my eyes as he reads it. And he shared with me just the other day, can I take your book to school? Because there's a new kid at our school and I think he's scared. If one child is helped in that way, I'm good.
Hey, you, please give your son a big hug for me, because that is so cool.
It was really, he's a total empath, right? So it was this really amazing realization that he gets it. Like he understands what the book is about without me explaining it to him. Although we do have a parent and educator guide that we put on the website for the book because we wanted the book to continue a conversation with your children. So what does it mean to be brave? Have you ever had courage? What do you think about failing? So question prompts. And then at the end of that guide, there's a worry journal. And this was also born from something that we've done with my children where they have a worry journal. And sometimes they're able to just say, hey, mom, can you go get my worry journal? My six-year-old doesn't write on his own very well. So he'll have me write out and he'll be like, my brother was really mean to me today. And, everything that's on his mind. And I think that as parents, if we can begin helping them to tap into that empathetic and deeper side through open conversations, then we can bond and connect closer to our children. Because what I ended up doing was bringing the book to my son's class, and he was so proud. And he sat next to me, and we read it to the whole class and said, take a deep breath in. Everyone took a deep breath in and take a deep breath out. There are exercises throughout the book for kids to do that will allow them to just keep going.
Yeah, I love that. I oftentimes will ask an author, have you taken the time to imagine a kid, smiling when you're reading the book? And I'm wondering if you've taken the time to think about the fact that there is going to be a kid, probably many kids, who will look at their parents someday and see that their parents are struggling, and they're going to say, hey, mom, dad, just keep going.
Hmm. Oh, that would be, talk about the ultimate award for getting this book out into the world. I think that I've even had that same son. He's six. And we're jumping on the trampoline, for example. And I'm like, buddy, okay, mom's done. You know, like, I'm 46 years old. I have kids later in life. I'm like, okay, mom's tired. And he goes, mom, just keep going. You wrote the book. Come on. And I was like, okay, you're right. I'm going to just keep going. And I hope that those three words can change people's lives in the ways that it changed mine.
Well, I am sure it is. I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
There is a big need in the world. I really hope people paid attention. We'll go back and listen again to, you know, appropriate behavior at the sports field.
Yes, please.
Me and my buddies were, I just got together. I recently celebrated the 50th reunion from my high school. And we're sitting down, me and some buddies, and we're like, parents didn't even come to our games. It was,
you know, that's right.
It was great. Now you
that's
go out and
right.
Like,
right. And now it's the biggest, almost personal investment that we have as parents. I host a parenting podcast called Stroller Coaster, and we had a parenting expert on that gave this piece of advice for any sports parent. It's when you're talking to your kids about the game, it's not, you did great. You scored the most goals. Congrats. It's, I loved watching you.
Mm-hmm.
You were working so hard out there. That must feel so good. So I changed how I talk to my kids about their sports, because for them, that in school are what to us is work, right? Mm-hmm. So if we get an award at work, that's our feather in our cap. For our kids, it's the trophy on the field. So if we can reframe for them what it is success looks like, it's like, wow, it was so fun watching you and you worked so hard. That's going to work out. Like, cause you worked so hard on this. If we can send some of those messages, and I love, you know, a parenting expert sharing that. And now I apply it in my own parenting.
Absolutely. Well, we should tell everybody, well, first, if you could tell everybody where they can go. If they're a busy executive and they want to get coached, to just go for it.
Well, my communication coaching side, it's lynnsmith.com. And then Just Keep Going is out September 30th. You can buy it wherever you buy your books, your favorite bookstore. And you can also go to justkeepgoingbook.com, where you can get that educator guide and learn more about Mouse.
We've had a really great time, a really inspiring time.
I hope so. I feel that way too. Thanks for having me.
Our guest has been Lynn Smith. Lynn, thanks so much for being on Reading With Your Kids.
Thank you.
Are you looking for a creative way to bond with your kids? Let me tell you all about Drawing With Your Kids, the ultimate destination for artistic adventures. Join us as we dive into the wonderful world of children's books, with renowned illustrators guiding you step by step. From beloved characters to whimsical scenes, unleash your imagination and create cherished memories together. Whether you're a seasoned artist or just picking up a pencil, there's something for everyone at Drawing With Your Kids. Please visit our website, readingwithyourkids.com, and click on the Drawing With Your Kids link at the top of the page and let the creativity flow. Drawing With Your Kids, where every stroke brings stories to life. Joining us right now from the beautiful state of Indiana, she is returning to the show to celebrate two great new books. Why is Fayette is the picture book. Mindset Power is the middle grade book. Please welcome back to the show, Shannon Anderson. Shannon, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me back.
You are so welcome. Before we get into it, I just need to give a big shout out. Shannon is one of my favorite teachers. She invited me to perform at her school last year. I had the most amazing time, and I had so much fun visiting her classroom. Such great kids. I'm excited to talk about the growth mindset with you, because that was one of the things that I felt from all of your kids. They were so positive and felt so empowered to learn, and I know that's something that you instill in your students.
Well, thank you. Well, we definitely enjoyed having you, and the whole convocation was amazing. My kids felt extra special getting to have you come to our classroom and do a personal visit, so thank you so much for that. But yes, that's my goal, that my students would feel empowered. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is because of growth mindset thinking.
Yeah. Where did you, where did the passion for this teaching growth mindset come for you?
I can't really trace it back to where it all started. I've always been one of those that reads more self-improvement books than anything else. And I just kind of stumbled upon, you know, Carol Dweck's work with growth mindset in her book, Mindset. And just watching different videos, and the word just kept coming up and coming up. And at the time, I was a coach at my school. And so I was in charge of some of the professional development for the teachers. And so one of the PDs that I had was on growth mindset thinking and the important things that we can do as teachers to make a difference in our classroom by teaching our kids about what the difference is between a growth mindset and a fixed mindset.
So let's define what a growth mindset is, please.
Sure. So a mindset is basically your set of beliefs about something. And growth, of course, if you think of a flower growing, we can think of it in terms of our ability to learn and grow ourselves. And so a growth mindset is the thinking that we don't have a glass ceiling, that we don't have like this certain place that we get to and we stop learning, or that there are certain things that we can't learn. Something I like to point out to students that kind of blows their mind when we're talking about the brain is that the brain that you woke up with this morning is different than the brain you have right now, even if you just woke up an hour ago, because our neurons, which are our brain cells, are doing so many things, and we have billions of these going around firing in our mind. And every time we make a decision, it fires these different neurons to do different things. And so our neurons, they have this saying where it's whatever fires together, wires together. So the thoughts you have more often and the things you practice and try more often, those are going to wire together. So if you've heard the term neuroplasticity, what that means is, you know, the neurons are able to actually change the wiring of your brain because of the decisions that you make and what you keep doing. So, for example, if I'm learning to tie my shoes, then the neurons that are firing to the specific motor neurons, you know, the muscles that I need, and the thinking neurons for thinking about the process of learning to tie my shoe, what the steps are, is as that's happening, all those neurons are firing. But then when I practice it again a little bit later or even the next day, those same neurons are going to be needed to do that task. And the more I practice it, the more those neurons form those connections and get stronger and stronger. And I don't know about you, but for me, if I lean over to tie my shoes, I don't have to think about, okay, wait, I need to take a lace and make a bunny loop. You know, I don't think about that anymore. It's just automatic because I've already formed that neural pathway. Now, on the other side, the bad news is that we can actually lose some of those pathways if we don't practice something. So, for example, when I was in high school and college, I studied Spanish. And, you know, when I went to Mexico with one of my Spanish professors in college on a trip, I could carry on a conversation. It probably wasn't pretty, but I could carry on a conversation. And I haven't done that in so long that I still know the basics. I mean, I could count to 100 for you. I could say the alphabet and some basic, I could order in a Mexican restaurant. But as far as being able to carry on a conversation, I've lost some of that connection that was in my brain for those things because I haven't practiced it. And our brains are very efficient, and they will prune things that aren't being used to continue to form pathways that are being used at the time.
Mm-hmm. If you're an athlete, one of the phrases that you hear a lot as an athlete is developing muscle memory.
Yes.
And a lot of times it's, you know, deceiving because we think, oh, our muscles have a memory and our muscles are remembering how to do this. In reality, it's what you're talking about. Our brain, which controls our muscles, you know, goes through the process of how to fire the different neurons to make the muscles move in a certain way. So the muscle memory is actually in our heads. It's the, you know, firing down these pathways that we create as we practice things over and over again.
Absolutely, yes. And you can tie that to learning to ride a bike and having that muscle memory and balance, to learning to shoot a basket into the basketball hoop, you know. And I learn from each time that I don't make the basket. And that's another huge concept about growth mindset thinking, is that we learn from our mistakes. As a matter of fact, in my classroom, we call our mistakes growth spurts rather than mistakes, because we grow from everything that we learn. So I just kind of made up that term, and thankfully it got put in the book. I insisted. I was like, we need this term to be our mistakes. They're growth spurts. They help us grow and learn. So if I go to shoot the basket and it's a total air ball, doesn't even make it to the rim, then I just learned something about, okay, I didn't either push off enough with my legs, or maybe my arms, maybe my aim was off. And so then when I go to try again, and I talk about this in the book Mindset Power, the success cycle, where we try something and then we fail, which I don't mean to sound negative. Fail means first attempt in learning. So we fail, but then we learn from it. But then the key is, we learned from that failure and then we improve in some way. So you're changing something before you try again, and then the cycle continues. So you try again and you may have another fail or setback of some kind. You learn from it, you improve or change in some way, and then you try again, and it just keeps going. So when I go to try again for that basket, if this time it goes way over the backboard, I realize, whoa, I gave it too much power that time. And so then I'm going to learn from that, change it again, and those neural pathways are going to get stronger, and I'm going to get to the point where I'm making more baskets than I'm missing, hopefully. And again, that muscle memory is starting to take over, and I'm starting to learn about what it feels like to have it go in, and what it feels like to do the right aiming and the right pushing off and all of that.
So, I think we're in our society, we're really comfortable with the idea of practice. And, you know, when it comes to athletics, when it comes to certain types of art, like dance, magic. But I don't know if we're as comfortable about the idea when it comes to academics and learning. I don't think we always associate, you know, practicing and making mistakes and learning from those mistakes when we're talking about school. It was like, you take a test and you fail, that's it, you move on to the next subject. How can we apply this growth mindset into our learning?
Sure. And I see this most in the classroom during math time, it seems.
Oh, okay.
So, and many times, like you said, it can be something like a physical thing, goal that you're going toward, like in sports. Sometimes it's a behavioral thing. But when we're talking academically, I see it most often in math during problem solving, especially like a multi-step problem, things like that. And so I try to encourage my kids through lessons in different growth mindset concepts, like resilience, for example. I have this little weeble wobble that I demonstrate with, and we talk about, you know, they weeble and they wobble, but they don't fall down. And so what happens, you know, when we get knocked over and this problem seems really hard, you know, we need to be resilient and be able to get back up again and try again. Using different models and mentor texts, things where you can show examples of failures that ended up becoming a success, talking to the kids about how, you know, especially like in science, like experiments and things, they're all based on all of those trials and failures to get to the point where you are having those successes because of those trials. So it's a matter of seeing what things don't work to narrow it down to, okay, so the options we have left and the strategies we have left, what can we see that does work? Unfortunately, in schools today, we do so much assessing. I think sometimes that hinders kids from taking those creative risks, or it might possibly keep them from wanting to try because they are afraid of that assessment, and that's maybe going to be a label for who they are or what they're capable of doing or not doing. So it's an unfortunate thing that, you know, assessment is part of our schooling. But it also, if we can frame it in a way that assessment is feedback, and that feedback is important. I always tell my students, when I go to a writing conference, I pay extra money to have someone give me critical feedback of a story I'm working on, because I want to know, how can I get it better? And so teaching kids to look at feedback as a positive thing and not as a thing where we're trying to tell you what's wrong, or, you know, that you didn't do it right, but instead to show ways that you could improve it. Because, you know, like I tell the kids, I want my book to be the best book possible. I want my story to be the best story possible. And so when people can point things out to me that I could improve to make it better, then that's amazing. I always tell kids on author visits, you know, they're so lucky. You know, all these kids sitting in the gym are so lucky because their teachers will give them that feedback for free, and I have to pay for it to get, you know, someone to give me their opinion on what needs changed and what can stay. So just, it's so important to teach the kids resilience and to teach them, you know, I call it being on the struggle train and having, you know, surrounding them with and having them help create inspirational sayings and reminders such as, I can do hard things, or I don't have this yet. Thus the title of the book, Why Is For Yet, the powerful word of yet. You know, you may not have it now, but, you know, you just don't have it yet. You can get there, and we have the ability to get there, which is the whole concept of growth mindset, is that you do have the ability there. It's not that someone is born, you know, when they come out of the womb, they don't already know how to swim like Michael Phelps. He had to put in lots of hours and lots of practice to get to the level that he is at. I always share with the kids lots of different analogies to try to bring this point home, because, you know, it seems so obvious, but if you just keep telling kids, you know, you can do it without an example to go with it or something to anchor it to, then it's kind of meaningless and sounds like, you know, the Charlie Brown wah, 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 wah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so thinking of the iceberg, you know, when we see an iceberg, we just see the tip. So when we're looking at other people and seeing their success, don't let that be a comparison trap where you're thinking, well, they can do it so well, I'm just going to step down. That's for them, not for me. I'm not good at drawing, or I'm not a math person, or I'm not an athlete. And so thinking about, well, what's below the surface of the water, though? What are you missing that you're not seeing that they have done differently? And then when you can pick that apart and you can see, oh, wow, I guess they practice with a personal coach for 4 hours a day, and oh, I'm not doing that, and oh, it looks like they do this special regimen for how they eat and how they take care of their body and their brain, I guess I'm not doing that. And so then to see, you know, it's not necessarily a level playing field when, and you're not comparing apples to apples there. So I think those kinds of things too can help. And there are so many books on famous failures, you know, from Einstein to, you know, even Ben Franklin, you know, different people that have invented different things, what they went through, the trials, the setbacks, the hard times that we don't necessarily see. We know them for what they did do well when it finally got to that point, but not seeing the before part.
Mm-hmm. How can we as parents, with my son, when he was, especially in middle school and in high school, you know, when he was in athletics and, you know, he lost the game or whatever, it was easy for me to sit down and, hey, you got to get better the next time. What do you have to do? It was different when it came to academics, because he came home with that test paper and there was a big red letter on it, and it wasn't the letter that we hoped for. There wasn't, you know, I wasn't able to kind of sit and think and, oh, dude, let's sit down and see what you missed, kid. It's, you know, it was more like, all right, how come you're not working hard? You're not spending enough time in your homework. How can we be more supportive as parents when it comes to that stuff?
Okay, so a couple of things. And one of the things that is a huge takeaway from Carol Dweck is her experiments that she did on how you talk to a kid, how you praise a kid. And so what she did was she had all of these students try this task, and half of the students, while they were working on the task, were praised for, oh, my goodness, you're so smart. You're intelligent. What are you, Einstein? You know, and they were praised all about, like, their innate ability, versus the other half of the kids were all praised for their effort and their work. Like, great job. Oh, you must have really worked hard on this. Oh, you spent a lot of time on this. Nice job trying different strategies. And so it was specific to their effort that was put in. And the kids that, so after all of the kids accomplished all of these things, then they were given a choice on if they wanted this task or this task to do. And one task was easier and one was harder. The kids that were praised for being smart chose the easier task because they wanted to keep that label of being smart, versus the kids who were praised for putting in a lot of effort and trying really hard were more apt to choose the more challenging task. And then it's so interesting, because then after that, even the kids that were doing the more challenging task actually did better because of all the psychological thinking there of, I work hard, I can do this, you know, I try. They ended up doing better than the kids that did an easier task. And not only that, it goes a step further because when they were interviewing these kids afterward, the kids that were praised for effort wanted to hear the feedback and they wanted to know how to improve. The kids that were praised for smarts did not really care as much about the feedback. And the other thing was, a lot of those kids who didn't do well lied about the result to try to keep that label. And so it's just amazing the power of that and what we can learn from that, our takeaway in that, you know, making sure that we're always praising the effort of the student, the athlete, whatever, versus saying good job, because then they might feel, or not saying good job, but saying, you know, you're so smart or whatever, or saying something that is innate, that's just like a given talent, then that's not going to be as effective because then they're going to be fighting to get that label again instead of striving to work hard to achieve something. And then another thing too is being careful how we set our goals. So you've, I'm sure, all heard of SMART goals, mm-hmm. you know, the specific, measurable, all of that. Well, for my book, Mindset Power, I made a smaller version of that just called SET. You set a goal. And so the S is for specific. The E is for your effort, and the T is for your time frame. And so in this, I felt like this was an easier model for my kids to follow in my third grade classroom when I was teaching in third grade. And I, at all times, had a goal board on one of my walls, and there were spots for post-it notes. And the kids were encouraged to set goals that were less than a month long. I wanted them to be shorter term so that they could actually, you know, see the progress, get those accomplishments, be able to, you know, tackle those and then set new goals throughout the year. We did other things like vision boards and things for longer term goals, but for the purpose of this goal board, we had short term goals on post-it notes. Mm-hmm. And so for an example, if someone wanted to improve, let's say their spelling, then instead of just saying, well, I want to be a better speller, that's not very specific. And so the specific part would be maybe on my next three spelling tests, I won't miss more than two, something like that. And then for the effort part, this is crucial. You want to say, well, how is this going to happen? What is your effort that's going to take place to get you to that goal? So, for example, are you going to make it a daily practice? Or are you going to practice on the bus with a friend from our class who has the same list? Are you going to write your words a certain number of times a week? Are you going to find an app on your iPad or device that will help you practice these words? Are you going to have your mom or dad quiz you on these words, you know, leading up to the test? How are you going to put the effort in to get to that goal where you're only missing one or two or none? And then the time frame, of course, is, which was set in the goal of the next three tests. So that would be over 3 weeks' time. And so then what happens, though, is, okay, those three weeks have passed. So either A, they made their goal, and they can take that off and they can go visit the celebration table, which I have a celebrate success table in my classroom with all kinds of noisemakers and things. Or they might need to tweak one of those three parts. So is it in the specificity of the goal that wasn't right, that they don't really know if they met the goal? Is it the effort part? So maybe they weren't putting in enough effort. Maybe they didn't try all of those things I listed. They just tried one or two, and maybe it's time to try a different way. Maybe it's the time frame. Maybe you need to give yourself more time. So maybe we want to say, you know, let's just look at the next test only. I'm going to focus all my effort on that next test. And so we'll just do the time frame, shorter time frame. Or maybe you need a longer time frame if it's something else that you're working on and you're not quite there yet. Maybe you need to give yourself a full month to meet a certain goal of some kind.
What a great skills to teach our kids. And it's great that you've created these two books. Why is Fillette for young kids? I'm thinking that this is a neat story about, you know, a character that learns this lesson.
Well, the way, and I just absolutely, I have to give a shout out to Jacob Suva, the illustrator, because this book is just beautiful. It blew me away when I got to see it. So what I did was I wanted to take each letter of the alphabet kind of as a structure or vehicle to talk about all the different components of growth mindset. And so it starts out with just a little intro about growth mindset. But throughout the book, you're going to see these different kids trying different things and their progress throughout using some of the growth mindset things, such as A is for ability and B is for your brain. You know, we talk about neurons in here. We talk about determination. We talk about your effort, how important feedback is. I'm just kind of skipping through here. I know how important it is to notice things, notice how things work and when they don't work and why. Optimism is a big part. Progress, setting those goals. Sometimes we have to work, you know, I love this. You don't always get what you wish for, but you can often get what you work for. Sometimes things take extra time. And of course, the yet. If you feel there's something you cannot do, remember the word yet. I can't solve this problem yet, but if I keep trying, I know I can get there. And then the Z is for zany. Zany ideas can lead to amazing possibilities. And then in the back, I have all kinds of, I have a glossary and I have all kinds of activities and extensions that teachers and caregivers can do to go along with it. And, you know, even though when you think of an alphabet book, you think of a younger audience, I had someone yesterday that on Instagram, she was a fourth grade teacher and said that she used it in her fourth grade classroom as an introduction to growth mindset. And that's, you know, when I was teaching third grade, if I would have had this book at that time, I would have used it even in my third grade classroom. So don't let the alphabet part fool you that it's, you know, something that's helping kids necessarily learn their ABCs. It was more of a structure for me to be able to put in a lot of concepts in one book and tie them all together with something. And so I just chose to do that through the use of the letters.
Yeah. You know, sometimes it boggles my mind that we haven't been teaching this in schools. You know, we teach, you know, expect kids to know this. I heard someone say the other day that we education system isn't set up to teach kids how to think. It's set up to teach kids how to recite or to parrot back information that they memorized.
Yeah, that's really sad. Yeah, I have too heard phrases such as we teach kids how to take tests, and that just makes me so sad. I hope that that's not really the case. I know that it's a real feeling though. Coming from a teacher standpoint and a parent standpoint, I have felt that at times. But we really do need to be focusing on how to get these kids to think, and not just how to think to solve this one particular problem that might appear on this test, but to problem solve and to figure things out that will apply to their lives. Because let's face it, the things we're training them for right now, we're training them for jobs that don't even exist yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about the things that didn't even exist when I was a kid and I was learning, you know, all these different skill sets, but then there are all these other jobs that, you know, I wasn't trained those skill sets. Think about when you go through, especially like in college, for example, you know, I took lots of classes on the philosophy and theories behind teaching and all the nitty-gritty stuff to be able to pass the teaching exam. But the thing that was most valuable to me as a teacher was the actual student teaching, the actual doing of it. Mm-hmm. And I think most people can probably relate to that in internships and other things where they get that chance to have a mentor that's actually in the job, or an internship, or, you know, the student teaching type thing, apprenticeships. All of those kinds of things I feel like are so powerful to prepare our kids, and that our jobs as teachers are to just to get those examples and opportunities in front of them as much as possible. And while we're presenting the different possibilities, also teaching them that any of those possibilities is within their realm if they're putting in enough time and effort and practice. And especially at the elementary level, I feel like we need to be flooding them with all of these ideas so that they don't just think of, like, especially I see this in my hometown. We're a very small town, and so you don't see a huge variety of occupations. And so, unfortunately, a lot of kids don't think out of the box, and they think, okay, well, I'll become a teacher or a firefighter, or, you know, the things that they see in their community, and don't realize, oh, wow, I could be a designer of this, or I could, you know, some of the things that might exist in bigger cities or they might exist here, but you don't hear as much about them or see them as much. And that's one reason I bring in guest experts. I try to do it every other week where I bring in a community member or Skype someone in or Zoom someone in to talk about their jobs and their careers. And of course, I preface, you know, the person coming in, I'll prep them by asking them to mention, oh, by the way, you know, how do you use math in your job? And oh, by the way, do you use writing for anything? And the kids are blown away when they hear these things. I always make my husband come in. He's the police chief of our town, and talk about police work because that seems to be a popular one that kids want to know about. And they had no idea that he does a lot of writing. He has to write a lot of reports and narratives, and he has to have good speaking skills to not only talk to the city council every time they meet, but also to be able to testify in court and do those types of things. And so we need to make sure our kids are prepared and know how to do all of those skills so that they understand, you know, like I want to be, so many of them want to be a vet. I always bring in a vet every year to talk because they think they get to play with animals all day, but not realizing the complex math that, you know, it's very important to get the medicine right, and you have to know your math and measurement and those types of things to be able to take care of these animals. And so kids need to be prepared not only for, you know, the academic side of basic math and basic reading and writing type things, but we need to prepare them for understanding what careers entail. But then, like you said, on top of all of that, the icing on top is giving them the mindset to pursue those things in the first place.
Yeah. So I just love this. This is fascinating. But real quick, what your mindset power, we touched on a little bit, but just a little bit more about what our middle grade kids are going to experience with mindset power.
Sure. So this has been really cool for me because even though it just released recently, I'm teaching two Mindset Power book studies online with kids all over the world. And so I've had a chance with each chapter we go through to hear their input on what they feel about the various topics. You know, like right now we're right at the beginning, like what is a growth mindset and talking about our brains and the neurons and all of those things. But it's been really interesting to hear the perspective of the students and how they feel about some of these things when people are preaching growth mindset to them and how much of it they really believe and how much they believe in themselves. And one of the first things we do is we take there's a little quiz in the book about fixed mindset versus growth mindset. And really everyone is mixed mindset. We're not all growth. We're not all fixed. It really depends on what it is you're looking at or tackling at the time on, you know, where you fall on that spectrum. But it was interesting when we did a little quiz on what they think fixed mindset is versus what they think a growth mindset is. And there were some revelations there that they didn't know. Like, for instance, to say I'm awesome at this sounds like this great positive thing, but it's actually fixed mindset thinking because you're thinking I've mastered it. I've made it. And so when you think in that way, like I've got this, you know, this is, I'm there. Well, but you still could improve, right? And so teaching kids that, you know, not to limit yourself and to be careful how you say things, because it can actually be, you know, a self-fulfilling prophecy, like, well, I've already got this, let's move on. You know, it could be, you know, I'm doing really well at this. I wonder if I could shave a second off my time next time I swim, or I wonder if I could, you know, get, you know, if they're still doing timed math tests or whatever, I wonder if I could get three more done in a minute or whatever it is. How can we do that just one step better? What ways can we improve? And that's part of what my subtitle is, A Kid's Guide to Growing Better Every Day. And that's one thing, I don't know if you remember from being in my classroom, when you first walk in, across the whole top of the wall is, in some small way, better every day. And that's kind of my motto is, you know, not necessarily are we going to grow better in everything we do, of course not, but what is one thing that I can take to the next level today? What are some small steps I can take toward a goal or to improve in whatever it is, my behavior, in my health, in my academics, in, you know, my physical abilities, anything, you can improve in some small way every day.
Wow. I just, you know, this has been such a fascinating topic for me. It's something that I try to do in my life, is something that my beautiful wife and I have tried to share with our kids. I think we did a pretty good job. They're both growth mindset people, I think. Well, we're mixed, of course, but I know folks are going to want to learn more about this, and they're going to want to learn more about you and all the great books that you've created. So where can folks go to connect with you, maybe to invite you to a conference or a virtual visit in a classroom?
Sure. So shannonisteaching.com is my website, so that's pretty easy. And there is a Contact Me tab on there, so you can just click that, and it will send an email directly to me. Also, if you want, while you're on the website, I think almost every page I have a place where you can sign up. I have a free newsletter I do the first Friday of every month. And I think if you sign up, you can go to past newsletters. And, of course, this past one, since both of my books were releasing, are all focused on growth mindset. So there are lots of freebies on there that are PDF downloads, like a growth mindset card matchup game that you can just print off and have the kids. You can give each of the kids a card, and they can try to match up a fixed mindset. They can try to find someone with the growth mindset saying that's the opposite. And you can, you know, make charts. I have surveys. I have all kinds of things. You can also connect with me on all the different social media channels, but at Shannon Teaches is my Twitter, if you want to go on there. Author Shannon Anderson is my Facebook, and Shannon is Teaching is my Instagram. I'm kind of newer on there. So, but yeah, those are different ways that you can connect with me. I know my publisher for both of these books, Free Spirit Publishing, if you go on there, they asked me to create a teacher guide. And it's like a 25-page guide to go along with Mindset Power. So if you want to be able to do a book study with your whole class or in small groups or an after-school club or something, that is a free, completely free download. So you can go in there onto the Free Spirit Publishing website, and if you put in the search bar Shannon Anderson, my books will pop up. That's the easiest way probably to find them. And right by Mindset Power has the leader guide, and the leader guide is completely free. You can just print it on off, and it has activities and discussion questions to go along with every single chapter.
Awesome. We've had a fascinating time speaking with our friend Shannon Anderson. Be sure to check out Growth Mindset for your middle grade kids and Why Is Free Yet for your younger kids and even your middle grade kids too. Shannon, thanks so much for being back on the show.
Thank you. Anytime.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Reading With Your Kids and will join us for the next exciting episode of the show. In the meantime, please connect with us on social media, facebook.com/readingwithyourkids, at Reading With Your Kids on Instagram, at Jedley Magic on Twitter, our website, readingwithyourkids.com. I want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful, starting with our guest, Lynn Smith. Please be sure to check out Just Keep Going. We also hope you enjoyed our listen back to a conversation with Shannon Anderson celebrating Why Is For Yet. I want to thank my team, Fatima Khan, Chris Daugherty. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we all want to thank you. You are amazing. You are making the world a better place every time you read with your kids. I'll be looking for you in the next episode of Reading With Your Kids.